shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So great to have you tuning in once again as we continue to look back at the historic 2005 hurricane season. And wow, what a season it has been up to this point. I mean, think about it. We've already had, in July, almost Category 5 Hurricane Dennis, and then not long after, what we would learn later would be Category 5 Hurricane Emily. It made landfall in the Yucatan, but nevertheless, that counts. Those were in the month of July. And then, of course, Katrina at the end of August, this major disaster, big death toll, national tragedy, political turmoil wrapped up with it. I mean, the hurricane season was already setting records, and we had a lot of hurricane season left. At this point, I'm back in North Carolina. It is early September. I am rather depressed about the loss of the cases. The one that I found out of the three that I messed up and had the wrong cable plugged in to the VCR, and it recorded only blue screen. You know, that was very difficult, and the hurricane season was continuing on. We had Lee and Maria and Nate out there. Luckily, none of them were of any consequence to the United States, so I didn't have to worry about that, but it was not going to quit. The hurricane season was far from over. I was dealing with all of this anxiety and just generally being upset about the whole debacle around the Gulf Coast phase of the Katrina mission. You know, granted, everything worked great in Florida, but it didn't work great in Mississippi. It was really rough, but it had really good support, you know, and as I have said a lot of times here, I'm a pretty positive person. It takes a lot to get me down, but this definitely got me down. It made me very anxious about the future of my project. You know, is it ever going to work? You know, do I look like a fool in front of people? And, you know, generally speaking, the answer was no. You know, yes, it was a setback, but, you know, failure is only temporary if you can persevere. And that's what I did. You know, I got back up on my horse, as they say. I had great support from my family, my colleagues, even Max Mayfield, the director of the National Hurricane Center back in the day, very encouraging of what I was doing and didn't want me to quit. And so I didn't. In fact, I very quickly got in touch with the people that make the cases, the storm cases. That's the brand name. And again, I remind you that was called the Hardigg Corporation, H-A-R-D-I-G-G. Now they're owned by Pelican. But I got in touch with them over email, told them about everything, and they sent me three new boxes free of charge. You know, thought that what I was doing was remarkable, and they were glad to help out. And Lowe's helped with funding new batteries, laptops, and cameras, and everything I needed there. And of course, Sprint was going to send me three new air cards because I was going to rebuild these boxes. I was going to build three new ones and keep going and just kind of put all of this defeat behind me and move forward. And so I got back home there in early September. It was really weird because gas prices were ridiculous. You know, Katrina affected the Colonial Pipeline out of the Central Gulf Coast that feeds up into the southeast actually comes into the Triad area of North Carolina. And I don't know how many people know that, but that's a big deal when the Colonial Pipeline has any disruption. That's a big problem. So there was not only higher gas prices, which is weird how fast that happened, you know, because there's still gasoline in the ground of gas stations that's already been paid for. But that's a story for another day. That, you know, that bothered me. I was like, man, people are just getting ripped. You know, there's no way that gas prices in Seattle or LA have anything to do with what happened in Katrina 2, 3, 4 days out. It should be longer, but whatever. That was part of it. This whole calamity around Katrina was all-encompassing. It was all we heard about on the news, and rightfully so. It really was, because it was an embarrassment to our country, in my opinion, at how bad the response was, the fighting amongst the politicians. It was ridiculous, and lives were lost because of it. The whole thing that we would learn in subsequent months and years about the failure of the levee system and all of that. I mean, it was just, it was awful. And I didn't like it. I had empathy for the people that were down there dealing with it. And it was just hard. It was hard to deal with. And on top of that, again, the major setback and the disappointment of the unmanned camera project. Nevertheless, hurricanes are not going to wait for me to cry and mope. They're not. Nature doesn't care. Nature is neither good nor bad. It just is. And I have to realize that. And I still do, even to this day. And you don't take anything like that for granted. So I readied myself by assembling more equipment, ordered the parts, and it was a good thing I did, because as we're going to talk about in this episode, the majority of it anyway, Hurricane Ophelia was going to be the next field mission, and as it turns out, it was right in my backyard. So the story of Hurricane Ophelia can best be summed up as a major pain in the butt. It really, really was on so many levels. It was a slow-moving, difficult to forecast, you know, lumbering, just aggravation. Nevertheless, I had to cover it. You know, it's what I do. But it was still a major pain in the butt. It began that whole saga of its own on September the 6th, if I recall. That was when the first advisory was written. And immediately it looked like, well, this is going to be just a real pain. Yeah, it looked like it could go into Florida as a tropical storm. So do I want to go down there or not? You know, I'm waiting on this equipment to arrive that I've ordered. I got to put some stuff together quickly and get these camera boxes ready to go. And what if it, you know, intensifies more than expected? I mean, there's always that unexpected, who knows what could happen. But Ophelia definitely redefined all of that, at least for that period of time in my career. And it would take a while for it to finally resolve itself. So there it is off of Florida. I'm figuring out, okay, what am I going to do? I'm blogging about it on the website. At least that's what we call it today. Back then, it was just my commentary. I didn't do videos back then. You know, YouTube was still in its just first few months of its life. So I just had blogs, if you will. You know, again, I called it, you know, my commentary. And I'd post graphics, and I did it all by HTML. Now you can use WordPress and all kinds of other fancy tools to put blogs up. I do it on Patreon all the time. But back then it was all HTML, so that was part of it. Just, you know, the great uncertainty with Ophelia was part of the aggravation. I didn't really know what to tell my readers. Stay tuned, right? You know, it was hard. So as time ticked by, it looked like Ophelia might go out to sea and become a hurricane while doing so. All right, that's fine. We need a break for sure. And maybe it'll just send some swells back, and maybe some rip currents could be a problem, and that would be about it. Well, no, then it decided, well, hurricanes don't really do that, but you know what I'm saying. It looked like Ophelia was, oh, wait a minute, it's going to come into South Carolina. And maybe as a hurricane. All right, well, let's get ready for that. You know, I'm in contact with Jesse, trying to coordinate things with Rebecca, my wife, my family. You know, was Dad going to be gone again? Maybe it's going to be here. Maybe I just need to go down to Myrtle Beach. Who knows? You know, it was very confusing. And but it did buy me some time, the slow movement of this storm, because my equipment showed up. Hartig Corporation sent the boxes, the new cases, Sprint overnighted or whatever, the air cards. And I knew I was going to have some funding coming in from Lowe's. So I went ahead and spent, you know, money up front to buy the laptops, the batteries, the cameras, whatever. I mean, I started assembling stuff. So the slow movement of Ophelia helped with that. That was a good thing. And so all the stuff arrived, and I was able to get one box fully assembled. You know, it takes a little bit of time. And I thought, all right, well, we will at least be ready with that one box, one unmanned camera box, ready to go. I'll get the other two ready shortly thereafter. And then we've also got the wind tower. Remember that? That big 5-meter behemoth that Edwards Incorporated, the crane company and fabrication company, made for me back in the spring. You know, we took it out for a couple hurricane fairs and showed it off a little bit. Well, this was going to be an opportunity to really test it. I did not take it for Katrina. I did take it down for Dennis. We talked about that. And I thought, all right, well, at least I got the wind tower. And maybe Ophelia will be a Carolina issue, and I won't have to drag this thing very far. Remember, it weighed like 600 pounds, and I had to carry it around on a big 14-foot flatbed trailer behind the Tahoe. It was a real drag, literally. But it was exciting. It was neat because, you know, it's a wind tower. It's going to measure wind. It's going to be cool. You know, I had a lot of faith in it, even though it was a big clunker. So at least there was that. So Jesse came down finally. And you know, as we watch the evolution of Ophelia here, he comes down and we go down to Fort Fisher, which is in the extreme southern part of New Hanover County. You go Carolina Beach, Keary Beach, and then the Fort Fisher area. Then there's the aquarium down there, the North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher, and then finally the ferry terminal. So we set up the wind tower down in the Fort Fisher area in this parking lot, nice and wide open. It was funny, I remember he took a few pictures of me climbing up the rungs that Edwards had put on the side of this thing so I could climb up and put the anemometer on top. I still feel like I looked really goofy in that picture. And yeah, we got it all running, had a live cam inside the box, or maybe it was just a webcam, I don't know. But we did have data, and there was a box there for all the weather data, and I think it was just a webcam image at that point coming in. And so we were happy. All right, cool. You know, whatever Ophelia does, we'll be able to get some good data. And I let the weather service know, and, you know, people took pictures of us, and it was kind of neat, little PR thing. Ophelia was not very threatening. A major hurricane, it was not, you know, so that was good. And, you know, like I said, kind of a good chance to slowly get back into things after the defeat, if you will, of Katrina. So Ophelia then kind of looks like, well, maybe it's going to become a fairly solid hurricane, a Category 1. Those are nothing to take lightly. You know, they are different, obviously, than a 3 or a 4 or a 5, but you know, a Category 1 will still bring some problems. And it looked like it might come into the Cape Fear region around the 13th or 14th or so. And so we were ready for that. And I remember I even took my older boys, two of my oldest kids, Nathan and Cole, down to the riverfront to let them see what was happening as some of the outer rain bands were moving in. You know, nothing too serious. Nobody's going to be calling Child Protective Services on me for that. Just to kind of show them what Dad does. It was neat. They could see the water splashing up on the bulkhead and feel the wind up their faces, stuff like that. And then it was time to go. Jesse and I were going to head up to New Bern and just kind of document things up there. And we had this one fully assembled box, one camera box, and we had to figure out where are we going to put this one box. We only have one this time. The other two weren't ready yet. And is it going to be New Bern? Is it going to be down at the Crystal Coast? You know, Morehead City, Beaufort, Atlantic Beach, Emerald Isle? Wasn't sure. And then it looked like Ophelia was going to cut across the Pamlico Sound. And that was actually the forecast from the National Hurricane Center for a couple of days, I think. I don't remember how long it was in the forecast, but I definitely remember that it showed the center going from basically Cape Lookout west of Cape Hatteras, you know, across Pamlico Sound to the west of Rodanthe and that area, which we knew, Jesse and I knew, that in that scenario, you would get a significant surge from the north and northwest wind from the Pamlico Sound on the sound side of Hatteras Village, Ocracoke, Rodanthe, and those areas. So this became the target. All right, we're going to go to the Outer Banks, and we're going to put the camera box, the one camera box that we have, in Hatteras Village at the Harrison's house. You remember the Harrisons? They were the family that I met in 2004 because of Hurricane Alex. Robert and Vicki Harrison offered up their house that we could use their phone line for internet in 04. Well, a year later, we have better mobile broadband now through Sprint, so we're good, you know, and we have this unmanned camera box. And I remember talking to Vicki on the phone and telling her, hey, things are different now. We don't have to plug into your house this time. In fact, we're going to just put a box up. We can put the box up on your porch and run the cable for the camera out to a, you know, maybe put it on your the columns of your porch or something, or maybe out in the tree, something in the yard. I think I even brought a stake that you could drive into the ground, like a huge ground screw to mount it on if I needed to. You know, we were going to come prepared, and she was excited about that. Told her husband Robert and their kids, no, Mark, the hurricane guy's coming back. You know, they are in the fishing business. They run a fishing operation there in Hatteras Village, and they don't leave for anything. And they just don't. They just know. I mean, it's just one of those situations. So they were going to be there. And, yep, come on out, they said. We're looking forward to seeing you. And I remember Vicki always offered up something to eat for us, you know, because she makes the homemade food there from what they catch from the ocean. So Jesse and I slowly made our way up out of Wilmington, into New Bern, on up through Little Washington, finally out 64 East. You get into Nag's Head, the Roanoke Island area, Manteo, whatever, go south, down on to Hatteras Island, crossing the Bonner Bridge. It's now the Basnight Bridge because the Bonner Bridge has been replaced, but it wasn't back then. You go across the Bonner Bridge over Oregon Inlet, and you are on the Outer Banks, and it is something else out there, I'm telling you. It is incredible. It's like a whole other world, a very narrow strip of land. Some of it's developed, most of it is not, thank goodness. Sand is blowing across, and in this situation, it's blowing from east to west because Ophelia is to our south, very slow moving, fairly large wind field, and the Atlantic is all churned up, and so the sand dunes are blowing across the road, and we get down to Hatteras Village. We see the Harrisons. We set up the camera box in their yard, and we notice, you know, that the sound, the Pamlico Sound, is starting to kind of drain out on this particular day that we are there, day one. So we stay at the hotel that's right there in Buxton. I think it was a Comfort Inn or something like that. And there's a few news media staying there. I remember WAVY, Wavy TV 10 from Portsmouth, where Jesse lives. They were down there covering it. I think ABC News out of, what is that, WTVD, Durham. I think they were there. So we did some news hits. That was fun. Always nice to do some press about what we're doing. And we're waiting for Ophelia, and it's slow moving, and it's just like, oh my goodness, come on. And I got to mention that along the way, there's a little, very little known story, a little side story. My friend Stan Goldenberg at the Hurricane Research Division of NOAA, a couple days before all of this, before we left for the Outer Banks, he had called me and said that he made arrangements, if I wanted to fly on the P-3 from Tampa, that's where the Aircraft Operations Center was at the time, now it's in Lakeland, and fly a mission into Hurricane Ophelia. And I had to turn him down. It was so hard, I admit. I mean, it was like, really? What bad timing. And the reason I had to turn him down was because this was threatening landfall in my backyard. You know, I couldn't miss that. And it's 10 hours on a good day to drive from Wilmington to Tampa. And then the mission's like 12 hours on the P-3. And then I got to drive 10 hours back. So that's really about 3 days total. you know, there's a hotel room involved in there somewhere too, I'm sure. And I just couldn't do it. It was like, oh my goodness. The one time I get invited to fly and I couldn't do it. And it was interesting. Jim Eds, if you know him, he's documented a few typhoons and hurricanes in his life. And he took my spot. He and I were good friends. I hadn't talked to him in a long time, by the way, but good friends back then. And I told him all about this. And he's, you know, said, hey, I got media credentials. Maybe I can take your spot. And I was like, sure. So that's exactly what he did. He got in touch with the Aircraft Operations Center, and he flew out there into Ophelia. So just a little side story there. My one opportunity that I ever got offered to fly on a Hurricane Hunter, the P3 in this case, and I had to decline. Well, that's okay. I'm on the Outer Banks doing what I do best. A little bit of renewed optimism here, you know, people are visiting the website, I'm doing news stories. You know, it's a little bit of a redemption. You know, the camera box that I have reassembled is working, and it looked like, okay, Ophelia could cross the Sound and we could get a significant surge. So Jess and I were going to leave the next day after spending the night out there and head up to Kitty Hawk and stay at the Hilton Garden Inn up there. To not be in the storm surge down there in Hatteras Village. It looked like it could be 6 to 8 feet maybe. And you just, you know, you don't want to be there for that. It could wreck the Tahoe or worse. So we stayed the night at that Comfort Inn there and then got up the next day. We're getting ready to leave. And we noticed something absolutely remarkable. The large wind field of Ophelia, which had, by the way, now, quote unquote, decided. Again, hurricanes don't decide anything. It's just the way we say it. We humanize them. But it did. It decided that it was not going to cross the Sound and just remain ever so slightly offshore, paralleling the Capes, Cape Lookout up to Cape Hatteras. And that meant, A, no landfall, and B, that the flow would constantly be in from the east and northeast, you know, for like a day. Just, you know, 30, 40, 50 mile an hour wind, maybe higher, blowing the Pamlico Sound away from the Outer Banks towards the mainland. And that's exactly what happened. And so when we got up and we were getting ready to leave, we noticed that it was just dry land, or mud anyway, almost as far as the eye could see, that the Pamlico Sound had been blown out. And people were walking around out there in the muck. I was like, really? That's nasty, but whatever. And probably not very smart, you know, because they could get stuck out there. And if the water comes back, it could come back in a hurry, as I would learn many years later during Hurricane Dorian. Story for another podcast episode. But in this instance, yeah, it was phenomenal. Boats were kind of on their side, listed over. You know what I mean? It was like, wow, this is really cool. So Jesse took lots of pictures of that. All the locals were just remarking at how amazing it was to see this. They had seen it, you know, in some form or fashion in past events, but this by far was the most dramatic of this reverse storm surge. And the worry was that once Ophelia passed, if it went just enough north instead of east and paralleled the Outer Banks as it turned more north, that the northerly wind would come in and really push the Sound with a vengeance back across this area and drive that storm surge in. So we had to go ahead and leave to avoid that. So we went ahead and made our way up to Kitty Hawk, where we would stay at the Hilton Garden Inn in order to avoid that storm surge. And of course, as it would turn out, Ophelia weakened and it went more east than north. And, you know, it turned out to be really good news for the Outer Banks because the storm surge was not that bad at all. The Sound was able to kind of come back in, you know, fairly slowly and steadily instead of this big rush. And then on top of that, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet of water, you know, beyond the normal tide levels. None of that happened. And, you know, certainly great news for the folks down there. So we went back down, Jesse and I did, the next day. This is like September 14th or 15th, somewhere around there. And picked up the box from the Harrison's house. You know, it worked fine. It just didn't see anything because nothing really happened. In fact, the worst of the effects were down to the southwest of where we were along the Crystal Coast area, Emerald Isle, Morehead City, Beaufort. You know, the Morehead City waterfront was all beat up pretty bad from storm surge and some pretty high wind there. And this further aggravated me because I missed that. You know, I misjudged where the worst impacts would be. I only had one of these camera units. And, you know, that was just more rubbing salt into the wound. I felt like I kept getting defeated here. I'm on a losing streak. That's how I felt. And I'm probably the only person that felt that way about all of this because, you know, you are your own worst critic, typically. And, you know, but it was a bummer because I was like, gosh, you know, these hurricanes come. I want to do the best that I can. And I felt like I wasn't living up to my own expectations. But it was still only mid-September. And I'm already seeing signs in the models as we say goodbye to Ophelia that something else is going to brew down in the tropics there, maybe coming up through the Straits of Florida, that could eventually become a really big problem. And that is exactly what would happen in the next several days. This is, again, mid-September, and it would not be long. Just a few days later, a brief respite, giving me just enough time to finish the last two boxes to get those ready to go, that what would become Hurricane Rita in the Gulf of Mexico. You thought Katrina was strong and angry-looking and scary. Rita, if you would ever think it could do it, would top that, at least in the early goings. It looked like Rita could be a bigger disaster than Katrina. And that is what we will cover in the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. This one kind of brief because Ophelia wasn't really that big of a deal, but nevertheless, it's one of the markers, one of the sites, if you will, one of the stops along the hurricane highway, whatever metaphor you want to use. And so there you go. There's the Ophelia story. A lesson in slow-moving, hard-to-predict, you know, what do we do with it kind of situations. That was Ophelia. All right, so next week we will get into the Rita saga, probably take a couple of episodes to do that, because Rita was really, really impactful and it was my chance at redemption. And we will talk all about that in great detail. That's the good thing about these podcasts. And most people have given me really good feedback that they love these details. And I think that's a good thing about this, is I can give you that insight that you can't get from a documentary because they're just not made for that. You got to kind of move on and keep people's attention. So that's what we will talk about in next week's edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. We will begin the Rita saga, probably covering a couple of episodes to do that. And there is a lot to go over, kind of my chance at redemption after these defeats here from Katrina and then sort of the meh kind of deal with Ophelia. Rita would really change things again, and we will start that in next week's episode. Hey, as always, I appreciate you tuning in. It's wonderful. I love the feedback that you're giving me. I am Mark Suddeth. We'll pick this up again next week.